welcome to Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. How about that? I am your host, Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Hey, how's it going?
How is it a-going? It is going. It's late August. Everyone else at work is on vacation, therefore it's relaxed, but also, oh God, oh God.
Yeah.
And yourself?
Well, you know what? Certain bit of that here as well. I have a couple weeks on an earlier shift at work, so I am exhausted. But at the same time, I have been having a fair bit of fun and a surprising bit of success on TikTok, which is always nice. Now, I had one video where I called out somebody for misgendering Elliot Page, and that post is now sitting at about 5,200 views.
Well done.
Which, thank you. Like, that's not most people's definition of viral, but that's also the highest view count I've ever had, so needless to say, not complaining. Actually, what I think is you made a few mistakes in your post, but don't worry. I'd like to take a moment to help you out, maybe clarify some things for you. First and foremost, in terms of casting choices, Elliot Page looks about as much like Barry Allen as Ezra Miller does, so he's a perfectly valid choice. Now, with gender pronouns, you seem to be a little confused. Let me help you out here. Elliot Page is male. Ezra Miller is non-binary. And finally, you're a transphobic bigot who's too scared to put their face on their own ignorance. And then I had another one about She-Hulk, where... Now, I've talked before on here about the content creator Soups and how I don't like the guy. And yet, I saw this post where I had to come in and have his back because some troll was attacking him for essentially having the right take on a certain scene from the first episode of She-Hulk, which, depending on time, we may or may not go into a little more later.
How she literally told this man that she's an expert at controlling her anger because...
Jesus Christ. Goddamn Christ, it is She-Hulk, not the Trauma Olympics. It is not Bruce's show. Now, you said it yourself. Jen Walters is an expert at controlling her anger. Of course she is, just as I am an expert at controlling my anger. Namely, the anger that I feel when people like you make me have to come in front of my camera and defend Soups' take on the whole thing because I don't even like Soups. But when man is going to demonstrate growth and empathy and understanding, I will give him his due. Here's the thing, you idiot. That scene is... You are the reason that that scene exists. It is about the anger that women feel having to put up with insecure man-children like you. So fuck right off. So I went off, and this dude... try to kind of indirectly duet me in response. And it was such a disappointment.
I'm so just like peripherally aware of like TikTok culture and stuff. So it's like, oh my God, to be duetted by someone in anger response. Heavens to Murgatroyd. I bet just like Twitter and everywhere else on Earth that there are people, there are some real assholes there. And you were telling me earlier, off camera or off mic, what have you, that you really don't want to have to defend this, Soups guy.
Yeah. It's
him and his superior Soups. Or whatever the fuck it, I, you know, yeah. Spelling, clearly it's a Superman reference, which is just, oh, that's depressing as fuck. But, tell me a little bit about Supes and why you don't like him.
Well, he's one of those, essentially, hot take guys on when it comes to pop culture media. Like he does reviews, commentary on pop culture news and so forth. And like on the one hand, you know, he has built up a fair sized following. He has built up success for himself. He's done the work. In that respect, I will give him his due. Mm-hmm. But that said, I've seen him flip-flop so consistently on some of his takes with the recent Obi-Wan Kenobi series that even former Senator John Kerry would be going, dude, really?
So this is just a thing of, like, he's one of those guys who's a reactionary. He goes, oh, that's too woke. And then a week later, he loves the woke thing. Is like, oh, no,
yeah.
you people don't get this show. And then a week later, ah, it's so woke. And it's like, man, all you're doing is, like, responding to word choices as the metrics go up or down. It's kind of hearkening to the how'd they choose the name Secret Wars for Marvel Secret Wars? Oh, well, they put a bunch of kids in a room and found out that the name Star and Wars was totally very popular. Well, you can't call it Star Wars or War Star, so how about something else like Secret? All right, good enough. And it's like, I feel like that's how some people make content. They're like, this gets a reaction. Well, you can't literally do that. All right, well, I'll do the closest thing. Okay, so you're not creating anything of value. You're just going, like, I would hope that as much as this is sometimes a blither fest, especially from me, I'm at least giving people an interesting perspective on things, possibly looking at different ways you can consider art. At least I'm having fun. These people never seem to be having fun. Like, they're always so angry whenever they're talking about things that they seem to be really into. And it's like, I don't think I've ever been that angry at something I'm into. Or, like, yeah, into something simply to be angry at it. I might have to try that. I might have to take up tennis and just be, like, really fucking spiteful about the whole thing. This game sucks.
Yeah, like, it's,
That's why I just spent $600 on it. Fuck this game.
It's not even, like, just anger or spite. Like, he also had a recent take with Black Panther Wakanda Forever, and specifically Shuri, that was just misogynistic as hell. So it's like whether it's saying something out of spite or pushing the misogyny button or whatever, it's just saying whatever can get him the biggest reaction.
God, that's so boring. I mean, yeah, you might as well just be sitting there saying swear words, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing necessarily in its proper context, but in terms of saying that is content to just sit there and go, shit, titties, goddamn, and literally just run that as not a joke but 100% content, congratulations, you are doing nothing with your life. You're making money, sure, yeah. I'm sure you're making some money, but you are accomplishing nothing. Enjoy nothing.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, for what he's created himself, I will give him his due. How he got there, I cannot respect. Now, that said, with She-Hulk and this troll was responding to Supes' take on the scene where Jen Walters is explaining that, like, she is able to control her anger and process her own traumas. Because as a woman, that's something she's had to do for literally her entire adult life, to not be treated as essentially a second-class person. Mm-hmm. Now, Supes' take was very, you know, as a dude, this was something I had not considered. And he talked about how grateful he was that Marvel had brought in female creators and female writers to provide this perspective. And I'm sitting here going, wow, he's actually demonstrating, like, growth, understanding, unusual amounts of empathy?
Curious.
I'm agreeing with him. What is happening right now?
And then a bigger troll, because there's always a bigger troll, came along and took up the mantle that it was presumed he had. And was just like, wow, no, someone's got to be a dickhead here. I shall be the dickhead. Look unto me, Cox.
Oh, yeah, no, like, it was the standard going off about toxic femininity, about how Bruce, about how Jen was saying that she was better than Bruce because her trauma is more important because woman.
No, no, no. She's better than Bruce on a genetic level. The show was very clear about that. She's better than Bruce on a genetic level. Thank you. Fucking lazy nerds. Get your details right. Back in the day, nerds knew their details, and you argued over the contradictions inherent in fictional details. You didn't just go half-cocked because you heard a word and get pissy. Fuck's sake. Have some self-respect. This is nerding, damn it. There are rules. And they don't even know those rules.
Right? It was, and I'm sitting there, God damn it. So I stitched it, posted a response to this troll. And then actually earlier today, he, like I said, he tried to subtly post a duet of what I had said. Mm-hmm. And I was watching, and it was like, as I've said, I think probably here, off mic, on my social media, basically everywhere I possibly could, I have been praying for the day that I see a troll post something creative, or that I at least haven't seen 150 times before.
Mm, yeah.
This was not that day.
I still pine for my Moriarty. I know you're out there somewhere, plotting, scheming, deceiving. I will find you, you son of a bitch, because the world has to be full of better enemies than the lazy and pathetic lot that always seem to find us. Oh, come on, give me someone worthy of me. Give me someone I can respect. That's the biggest flaw in narrative fiction. They always ride high on the nemesis, and they never give enough of the braying mob. It always turns out to be braying mob and not the nemesis.
Yeah, so I was sitting there watching, and it was like, okay, I don't know if he did intentionally, but he obscured my audio so that the only voice that could be clearly heard was his. So, obscuring the other person's message, check. Mocking the person because you can't mock what they're saying, check. And I'm just going down the line. It's like, I could go after this guy. This guy could be my first TikTok feud. But why?
Yeah. They're not nearly interesting enough, clearly, or, like, you know, creative or influential enough. So it's like, that's a waste of time to go after. But, hey, good to know that in the new frontier of social media, the same old shit happens. Nothing has changed. Everything is the same. Yay.
But I think the truly amazing thing to me, though, was in this conversation, and since we're audio, I would like to make clear that I'm using air quotes, about Hulk and She-Hulk and trauma and all that. His complete misuse of the word triggered was just downright special. because it was the internet definition of, oh, I got him angry, he's triggered. That's not what triggered means at all.
No, but I mean, like, I guess that shows just how kind of like half-assed and lazy he is. A fun troll, at the very least, knows that that's not, and like will playfully like lead it more towards that, instead of just like trying to do the whole look at it, and it's like oh. Well, I suggest by all means play with your food. Just make sure it doesn't go cold.
I was sitting there, like I said, I could go after him directly, but that's boring for me. And I'm thinking of my followers and going, I feel like fighting is not something that they really want to see.
There you go. Yeah, it takes a talent to make a fight entertaining.
Yeah,
it takes practice. Damn it!
Like, instead, I could like take his response video and show how to properly duet it. Number one, but to do kind of a troll 101.
I mean, you could, or you could auto-tune it. Just auto-tune him. Auto-tune him to the song Let's Duet from Dewey Cox, one of the single best albums ever created. I actually the other day discovered that there is a bonus disc to Walk Hard, the Walk Hard album. There is actually twice as much John C. Reilly, Dewey Cox in the world as I knew, and it's like rediscovering a favorite musician, or like an old book that you loved, and turns out that you only had half of the book, you only heard half of the album. It's all, my fucking god. I very much suggest anyone who is a music nerd, a comedy nerd, or a music comedy nerd who has not somehow seen Walk Hard, go check that out. It's some of the best parody music that happens to be exactly the kind of music it's parodying. And it has a great song in it called Let's Duet, which starts as a basic 50s love song and ends in pretty much like, let's fuck right here, right now. Let us do it. And along with the trolly nature of trolly trolls, one of the best ways to reply to them is to just roll with it in that sense. Just be like, I mean, hey, if you want to spend all your time trying to get my attention, obviously there's a reason for it, and I am flattered. Truly. In fact, let's duet.
I'm gonna beat off all my demons.
That's what love and Jesus are about.
Looking in your eyes, I start believing.
Let's bring this whisper to a shout.
Let's duet.
Now, and also, like, as you said there, to music content creators or music nerds who are on social media, that is a legitimate, wonderful way for you to deal with trolls, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
In my case, specifically, with this guy, that doesn't work, because it's a one-minute video where he only speaks for maybe 10 seconds.
Oh, that's more than enough for a remix. Listen, are Britney Spears songs where she says, and I swear to God, her only lines is like, it's Britney, bitch. And the rest of it is bum, 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 bum. Don't fucking worry about length. you're good. Easy to do.
I mean, like fair, there's also in my case the simple issue of I don't have the software to do it. But again, all that being said, you know, I do have a couple ideas where I can take this idiot and use his content to kind of like demonstrate and educate a little bit.
Yeah.
And still kind of indirectly respond.
I mean, do it up in whatever way best yeah. delivers that cold, cold dish of revenge.
Oh, I honestly, I don't even need the revenge. I'm more just kind of going, you know, these aren't bad ideas. So I think the first thing I'm going to do is just a little video to let my followers just go, like, okay, what do you guys want me to do?
I mean, that's another great option. Throwing it out yeah. there, at least, it gets some more interaction going, a little more traffic. Even if it's one or two people, it's something. And
exactly.
That's how you build an audience. Just something. So I take it that no one has died in the last week.
Well, actually, I was just about to say that now that we've covered the silly and ridiculous and, let's be honest, mildly stupid, that is my social media life. Although at the same time, though, in that She-Hulk post, I feel like I deserve an Oscar because 3/4 of the anger that I expressed was utterly fake.
Well, I mean, hey, that yeah. the internet is 99% fake and 1% people trying to sell you stuff.
Exactly. But, of course, the only place that we can go from internet trolls is celebrity death?
The dead! Are they still dead? Let's go check. Yep, still pretty dead.
And, of course, the one that we have to start with is actor Anne Heche, who was recently taken off of life support at the age of 53, succumbing to injuries that she had suffered in a rather serious fiery car crash.
I actually forgot about that. It's one of those things of, like, it kind of slow dripped to an end, and Anne Heche wasn't exactly someone I paid much attention to. I was like, okay, then. That sucks for Anne Heche, her family, and her fans. And it's probably the last time I'll ever think of Anne Heche. It's someone who used to be quite a name, and then just kind of vanished. Like, people remember Ellen and her contribution yeah. to gay rights. No one really remembers Anne Heche, mostly because Anne Heche hit eject on that.
True. And now, Heche, there was a good while there where she was in a number of high profile films. Now, the article that I'm reading from was on cbc.ca, and they list things like Donnie Brasco, Wag the Dog, and I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Very late 90s. Very yeah. late 90s name. Yeah.
And also, of course, I believe she was in Volcano, which, in terms of 90s movies. And, you know, as you said, with gay rights, she was kind of the other half of probably one of the most groundbreaking couples in 90s Hollywood in terms of her relationship with Ellen DeGeneres. But at the same time, you know, like she did have that period where she kind of went the Margot Kidder route. Where she, for lack of a better term, she basically lost her mind.
Yeah, yeah. And from what people have said of this, it's one of those things of, like, depending on the mental illness and the reoccurring nature of it, you can have, like, episodes and
yeah.
come in and out of things. And it seems she may have been in an episode, and considering that footage of the vehicle ripping down that street, there's certainly some sort of, like, it's not a rational action. And it's just, that's a fucking shame. That, like,
yeah.
Ultimately, this thing, it destroyed her career. It kind of pulled her down from history. Like, she had a legacy in history, and that kind of just got, you know, and then ultimately it probably seemingly led to her end. And it's just, that fucking sucks. Fucking sucks. You know, and that's someone who got treatment. It's sometimes treatment isn't everything. And, like, even if a treatment is 100% successful for what it is, if something is episodic, fuck. You know, it's a matter of getting to it with the treatment in time. And if that doesn't happen for one reason or another once, it can go bad.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also obviously the very simple, if you miss the wrong med on the wrong day.
Mm.
But at the same time, though, something that I had seen somebody point out on social media that made me stop and kind of go, if you really think about it, Haish did end up pulling something positive out of her mental health issues, because really alongside say Carrie Fisher, Haish really did help start the conversation around mental illness in Hollywood.
This is fair. Yeah, she certainly was a part of it, but once again, it seems that history has decided to pretty much mostly ignore her. So certain people get, like, Robin Williams gets remembered for it. Carrie Fisher gets remembered for it. Margot Kidder gets remembered for it. Anne Heche will probably be remembered by Anne Heche fans. And it's really fucked up that it's just that simple of, like, you were good and your message is important, but there, you know, like, there's just something about her that she seems to get forgotten. And it's just, fuck. I hope that she's not entirely forgotten.
Oh, yeah, no, amen to that. I mean, it's kind of hard not to wonder what might have happened if she had been able to stay in the spotlight, so to speak.
Yeah, like, if her relationship with Ellen had worked out or what have you, or if she had been the one to rebound, not Ellen, after the breakup and cancellation, and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
There's so much. If Meg Ryan had just stopped making stuff, and so the other women in Hollywood in the mid to late 90s could actually get a chance. Reading her 90s syllabus, it's very much like, so you guys couldn't get Meg Ryan. I literally thought Meg Ryan was in Wag the Dog, so, you know, it was the 90s.
Yeah.
Meg Ryan was the answer.
Pretty much, and, I mean, if you look at 90s Anne Heche, like, she did very much have a Meg Ryan look to her.
Yes. Yeah, and which is, again, like, once again, you know, you either had the haircut from Friends or the Meg Ryan in the 90s,
yeah,
for the most part. And it was considered plucky for actresses. And in the 90s, you didn't want, like, heroines. You needed plucky women who could run alongside your action heroes or shit like that, and not make too much trouble about it. It's a shame that, yeah, like, she never found the role that helped her redefine herself beyond that. And fuck, not just because she'll never get a chance, but it's like, there was so many opportunities now. Imagine just, like, someone had found the right streaming project for her.
Yeah, like Disney Plus or Netflix, like those two services alone, the way that they're cranking out content.
Yeah.
If this car crash hadn't happened, there had to have been something.
Yeah. Well, that's just fucking sad.
Yeah. Now, as the death list continues, we go from actors to directors. In this case, director Wolfgang Petersen, who recently passed away at the age of 81. And you may not know the name specifically,
but you know some of the movies. Not many, but some. Wow.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like when I say Das Boot, In the Line of Fire, Air Force One, The Perfect Storm, or Troy. Those were all his movies.
Yeah.
And
even if you don't like, a lot of people are kind of mixed on Troy, and that's fine. But there's no way in hell you did not enjoy Air Force One.
No,
is sometimes too artsy, too slow for some people, and it's all in German. So get real, motherfucker. Perfect Storm is very George Clooney. It's a very George Clooney film. And Troy kind of makes choices. But there is no way in hell anyone is capable of watching Air Force One and not going, that was a lot of fun. That's possibly one of the most competent action films of all time. And the purest of Harrison Ford 90s action films. The purest. Tom Clancy wishes.
Like, oh God, does he ever.
Yes, he does.
He wasn't dead. There is that. I'm saying this as someone who enjoyed Patriot Games and Clair and Present Danger.
Oh, yeah, listen. I loved his Jack Ryan. Ryan. But,
yeah. Like I was just saying, at the same time, as soon as I said Air Force One, when I was reading off that list, dear listener, I promise you that there are four words that popped into your head.
Get off my plane.
Petersen's first film in Hollywood was another truly iconic film. 1984's The Neverending Story.
Just consider for a minute the wide genre array that gives you. So you've got tense historical thriller, you've got epic Greek myth, you've got urban fantasy, I guess is what you would call the never-ending story. Somewhat, I mean, it's a fantasy story, but it's told to a child in the modern world. Complicated. You've got Air Force One and what was the other one you said? The early 90s drama.
There was In the Line of Fire, Air Force One.
Okay. In the Line of Fire, which if I recall is a courtroom military drama.
Let me think, because let me just double check, because I think there's a Clint Eastwood film that I'm also mixing it up with. Oh no!
Oh yes!
Yeah, no, it was Clint. Yeah, it was Clint Eastwood as a Secret Service agent. Yeah,
and it has the plastic gun. Okay, yeah, I remember that now. I remember it more for the plastic gun. That's the funny thing is I remember that movie came out and they're like, he's got a plastic gun in it. How would that even work? And now it's like, I think 2 weeks ago, there was a, or maybe a month ago or so, something, somewhere in the States, there was a buyback program for guns, and someone went out and bought a 3D printer and a fuck ton of maker plastic and made like 300 fucking 3D guns, because it works out that you can make a profit by selling these new 3D guns to the cops. as a gun buyback program than it costs to buy the 3D printed materials.
Oh, you know, like I can totally believe it, because I was literally just about to, when you said how plastic gun, how does that work? I immediately thought, yeah, we can 3D print guns now, because yeah, like I've seen stories, God, at this point, probably at least 2 or 3 years ago, of people 3D printing working handguns.
Yeah, and like this, you know, obviously the one in the movie isn't 3D printed, but it's like it's plastic molded, and it's to get it, you know, through security and everything. And
yeah,
the whole thing is, how can you possibly fire this gun? They can't work. Anyway, John Malkovich finds a way to make it work, and he will kill that president. At least I think it was John Malky.
I'm not 100% sure, but again, let me just double check, because that does sound right.
Malky. Malkovich.
Yeah,
Malkovich.
Yeah, as Mitch Leary. Yeah, if I remember right, he was the villain, if I remember correctly.
Malkovich.
Now, when I say if I remember correctly, also keep in mind, having not actually seen the actual movie, I am going from the trailers here.
Oh, I remember watching it with my parents on VHS. They had rented it, and like I stayed up. You know, it's not exactly exciting stuff for a kid, but when you're staying up late, it doesn't matter what you're watching. And then,
no.
Thanks to the great people at TBS, I think I saw it maybe another 26 times, all in like little spurts. Like, here's the beginning, here's the middle, here's the end,
yeah.
Here's the end, here's the beginning, here's the end, here's the end, here's the end, here's the end. They really like showing the end. I don't know why. Anyway, I miss that. Having like stations you can just turn on and be like, it's a random fucking movie. There is no choice. I have no option. Fate has decreed. I have to watch the end of this Clint Eastwood movie again.
Yeah. For those of you who may not be aware, general rule of thumb with TBS specifically, anytime you see a commercial on TBS for movies that are going to be played on TBS, that commercial contains the entire film lineup.
Yeah. And also, if you miss the time that it gives for when the movie's going to be on, don't worry. It'll play another 57 times that week. You won't miss it. It'll be fine.
And, If I remember correctly, now I sort of get TBS in that I pirate stream All Elite Wrestling. And so because of the way that the stream works, I also get what comes on afterward. So if I remember correctly, if you are a Ben Affleck fan, now is the time to be watching TBS.
Back in the day, there was, I don't know why they chose to do this, but 1 July to celebrate America, they decided to show JFK like once a day. JFK isn't exactly the most pro-America movie. It's in fact very much a they're coming to get you movie, but it got to the point where I could time that you could pretty much be like, no, we have to go back and to the left. And you
Thank
turn
you.
The TV on right to back and to the left, back and to the left, back and to the left. And it was just, yes, back and to the left, and then leave and go watch something else.
Yeah, literally as soon as the second you brought up JFK, I was just waiting for you to finish so that I could beg you to drop in back into the left somewhere.
Back into the left.
I was, like, Kevin Costner's delivery on that line is so ridiculous. I kind of love it.
Kevin Costner is so good in that movie. He actually makes... Garrison seem like a good, like a competent investigator. That guy was a fucking lunatic. A fucking lunatic. He became such a disgrace due to many other things. He was a complete shithead. And he essentially used the JFK case to cover it up that he was such a shithead and to try to, like, boost his dead career. It's just, the guy, like, I'm pretty sure he was dead by the time the movie came out. And it's like, oh, that's a real shame, because you know who would have been all over this dick? Garrison would have been all over it. He would have just been like, yes, I am truly the greatest hero ever. Just like Kevin Costner said. You're right. I am practically Elliot Ness. You're right. Absolutely. Fucking hell. Yeah. At some point, I have to show my girlfriend JFK, because she's asked about it, and I made a joke about a month ago or so about Kevin Bacon covered in gold doing cocaine and blowing dudes. And she was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, you've never seen JFK? Anyway, at some point, I have to sit down and watch it with her, and it's just going to be like, okay, this is historically accurate until it's not, and when it's not, it's very not.
Well, you know what? I'll go you one better, because I was actually just going to say that JFK is one of those movies that I've seen most of it, but like in pieces.
Mm.
So I've never sat down and watched the whole thing, start to finish. So I'm thinking, not only should we cover it,
oh my
but
God.
If we can swing this, I think when we cover it, we need to have your girlfriend on the show.
Oh my God. By all means, and if we can't get her on, then I can certainly talk about how the director has since lost his fucking mind. Completely. We'll get into that. We'll have to cover. Oh, there's so much we can get into. Oh, yeah.
Our day was ruined. There was a lot of people, you know, they're waiting by the players' parking lot. Now, we're coming down the ramp. Newman was in front of me. Hernandez was coming toward us. As he passes us, Newman turns and says, "Nice game, pretty boy." Hernandez continued past us up the ramp.
Then, a second later, something happened that changed us in a very deep and profound way from that day forward.
It wasn't.
He spit on us. And I screamed out, "I'm it!"
Then I turned and the spit ricocheted off him and it hit me.
Wow, what a story. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the immutable laws of physics contradict the whole premise of your account. Allow me to reconstruct this, if I may, for Miss Bennis, as I've heard this story a number of times. Newman, Kramer, if you'll indulge me. According to your story, Hernandez passes you and starts walking up the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say you were struck on the right temple. The spit then proceeds to ricochet off the temple, striking Newman between the third and the fourth rib. The spit then came off the rib, made a right turn, hitting Newman in the right wrist, causing him to drop his baseball cap. The spit then splashed off the wrist, pauses in midair, mind you, makes a left turn, and lands on Newman's left thigh. That is one magic loogie.
Well, that's the way it happened.
What happened to your head when you got hit?
Well, my head went back to the left.
Say that again.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that the spit could not have come from behind. That there had to have been a second spitter. Behind the bushes on the gravelly road. the spitter was behind you as you claim, that would have caused your head to pitch forward.
So the spit could have only come from the front and to the right.
But that's not what they would have you believe.
I'm leaving. Jerry's a nut.
Wait, wait, wait. The sad thing is, we may never know the real truth.
The final death that I wanted to mark was the passing of Jean LaBelle. Who is Jean LaBelle, you ask?
I know the name, but not why.
Jean LaBelle was considered a pioneering mixed martial artist, highly respected Hollywood stuntman. And if you've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, a lot of Brad Pitt's character, who I thought exclusively was inspired by Hal Needham, apparently actually Quentin Tarantino drew from the life of Jean LaBelle.
Okay.
Now, also, if you're a fan of professional wrestling, and more specifically one Bryan Danielson, one of his favorite submission moves is the LaBelle lock, which was literally invented by Jean LaBelle.
Nice.
Now, Jean LaBelle, shall we say, lived a rather interesting life. And in particular, and you remember the scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood between Cliff Booth and Bruce Lee?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically the fight where Booth kicks Bruce Lee's ass?
Yes.
Now, myself, I thought a lot of that scene was Tarantino's love of revisionist history. I would now like to tell you the story of Jean LaBelle and one Steven Seagal.
Aha. Uh-huh. I mean, that's just to get out there to start with, that's way more satisfying. Beat the fuck out of Steve Seagal. Please, continue.
So, picture it. The set of, I believe, Out for Justice, 1991. Jean LaBelle was working as a stunt coordinator on the Aikido documentary Out for Justice. It is alleged that at some point, Seagal announced that due to his extensive martial arts training, he was immune to chokes. When the then 58-year-old LaBelle heard about that claim, he gave Seagal the opportunity to test it. As the story goes, LaBelle set the choke up, Seagal said go, and Seagal promptly went. As the story goes, Seagal went out and went number one and number two in his pants.
Oh, damn. No wonder Steven Seagal doesn't let this one get out much.
In fact, ever since then, either because of a rumored legal gag order, or because in the stunt business, what happens on the set stays on the set, LaBelle has never confirmed or denied the story.
See, that's way more interesting and fitting than how it got reworked into a white guy beat the shit out of Bruce Lee because Bruce Lee was fucking trash. Tarantino misused that scene, regardless, because it implied a lot about the great and fucking amazing Bruce Lee. Beat the fuck out of that fake ass Steven Seagal? Absolutely. Yes. That is hubris. That is perfect. Attempt to undermine Bruce Lee because you didn't really like him that much, Quentin?
Yeah.
That's not cool, bud. This could have been done because, like, they could have had Chuck Norris was fucking about it this time. They could have had Chuck Norris get his shit rocked. That would have been hilarious. They could have had a young Steven Seagal even, like, just trying to, like, find someone to train him and just, like, have someone punch him right in the face. Once again, Quentin Tarantino, good writer, kind of misses the mark in a way that, you know, his scene will always remain, and it's quote-unquote cool and entertaining, but it's also like, you didn't get why that was really important. Quentin Tarantino, as always, kind of missing the contextual, like, culture behind something and just being like, yeah, it's so cool. Okay, man.
Now, I'm going to wrap this particular story up with kind of the aftermath and reactions from both men. And I feel like this will tell you a fair bit about the character of Gene LaBelle and the character of Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
Now, according to slashfilm.com and how they presented the story, they said LaBelle ended telling the story saying, quote, "Well, if a guy soils himself, you can't criticize him, because if they just had a nice big dinner an hour before, you might have a tendency to do that. Steven Seagal is a very outstanding martial artist. I've got nothing against Steven. Personally, myself, I don't think he's taught these mixed martial artists how to win a match. He's done a lot for martial arts," end quote. Seagal, on the other hand, has called LaBelle a pathological scumbag liar.
So it definitely happened.
Absolutely.
It exactly happened exactly how the story says it did, in which Big Shot ran his mouth and got choked out so hard he shit and pissed himself.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, no, okay, cool. Awesome. That's fantastic. You can always rely on Steven Seagal's ego to completely reveal what he's thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
The man's like a cheaper Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is already cheap.
Cheap, gross, overweight, mildly revolting cheap to look at. He's political Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
God.
That's
now,
funny. I did not know that about Steven Seagal. That's funny. I like that.
Yeah, there are so many. There are numerous stories around Steven Seagal, I think, where he just comes out looking terrible.
Mm. Yeah, hell, even some of his movies, he doesn't come out looking pretty fucking good, and he's the hero in them.
Or at least he thinks that he's the hero in them. And all I'm going to say to that is, another one that at some point we should discuss is executive decision.
Oh my God. Yes. At some point we unfortunately must discuss executive decision.
Now into follow-up fest. Now this first one I'm just going to do very quickly because there's not a whole lot here really. You remember back when we covered CinemaCon and there was the story of that mysterious envelope that was slid on stage during Olivia Wilde's presentation? And we eventually found out that it was a custody petition from her ex, Jason Sudeikis.
Mm-hmm.
That case has ended and she won.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah,
not surprised. I mean, like, I'm sure that she won entirely on her own valid points and such, and her legal team, et cetera, but also public opinion. Jason Sudeikis' team blew it the minute they did that in public. Just, you're kind of half-wits and assholes at best here. Maybe the kid shouldn't be with you.
Yeah, I mean, as I think we said when we originally covered the start of this story, okay, yes, the person hired to deliver those documents was going to do it by any means necessary.
Mm-hmm.
However, maybe they should have put a little more thought into it.
Yeah, there's ways to do this, and there's ways to not make it a horrible public embarrassment that then bites you in the ass. Even if it has nothing to do with the outcome, it just looks really fucking embarrassing for Jason Sudeikis, who otherwise...
Yeah.
is like on top of his career right now, I want to say.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Now, next up, we're going to Warner Brothers and we're going to be staying there for a good while.
Just note to self, throughout this clip, I want to find the song that is played as the Titanic sinks and just have it until we reach the end. Anyway, there we go.
Most of these I'm just going to breeze through just because the one that I want to get to is at the end of my list, and we want to get to it. With the cancellation of Batgirl, people have been wondering about other projects at Warner Brothers and whether or not those are still happening. Mm-hmm. First up is the Black Canary spinoff film that would have been starring Journey Smollett as her Dinah Lance character from Birds of Prey. That is still in development.
Surprising.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. Now, of course, James Gunn's DC projects are safe, and this includes season 2 of Peacemaker, so that's still mm-hmm. happening. One that everybody was wondering about is Blue Beetle, and as far as people know, that film is still safe.
Also surprising.
The main thing that Slash Film notes, and that's where I'm getting this list from, is Blue Beetle was meant to go to theater the whole time. It was never planned for it to go like direct to streaming. It was strictly a theatrical release, and the belief is that's why it's safe.
So that, yeah, and that's also why what is getting canned is getting canned, because it's all streaming.
But now this last one is considered the strangest one of the saved projects. You remember that Green Lantern TV series that was planned for HBO Max and that was announced and then never really heard from again?
Vaguely. Green Lantern tries and fails a lot of projects. I mostly ignore them. The day that you give me late 80s, early 90s era Guy Gardner so that I can laugh at his misfortune, then I will care about Green Lantern. That
Fair
day
enough.
Is unlikely to ever happen. So I don't give two fucking shits about Hal Jordan or his ensemble.
Well, oddly enough, according to the Hollywood Reporter, that TV series starring Finn Wittrock and Jeremy Irvin, with Lee Tolan Krieger from Superman and Lois directing the first two episodes, that series is still safe.
Curious.
Extremely, because it seems like with HBO Max, particularly with the planned merger between HBO Max and Discovery Plus, it seems more like they're going for more lower budget, maybe more reality-based programming on their streaming service, while focusing a lot of their properties strictly on theater release. Mm-hmm. And this Green Lantern series doesn't fit that.
No, it's going to be very expensive effects-wise. Or it should be.
Yeah. Exactly, and considering this is a studio that that's trying to recover $3 billion in debt.
Woohoo!
Like that's what got Batgirl canceled, if you really think about it. They're cutting whatever they can to deal with the $3 billion, with a B, dollar deficit from the previous administration.
Well, isn't that just lovely? You know, that's just a couple of movies from Marvel. Maybe they could fund them the money.
Oh, that would be lovely. And next up, while those projects are safe, if you're an animated project on HBO Max, you should panic.
Yeah, I saw the list, and while I didn't recognize any of those shows whatsoever, it certainly is a long one.
Yeah, shows that well, by this point, I think left HBO Max. This was the week of August 17th. Aquaman, King of Atlantis, which I didn't even know was a thing. Close enough.
That's apparently hilarious and cute as fuck. So, oh well.
Eh. Dodo, Elliot from Earth, Esme and Roy, The Fungies, Infinity Train, Little Ellen, Mama, Messy Goes to Key. But to be perfectly frank, if you don't have HBO Max, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about anyway.
Yeah, and I don't have HBO Max. I have Crave. Technically, I have access to all this stuff. I've never fucking heard of it. I don't, like, you know, I'm not one of those people who watches, like, kids or young adult cartoons. It's just not the kind of thing I watch. I watch, like, Lower Decks and Harley Quinn and Bird Girl. That's my level of animation integration, I guess. And none of that's going away because that's directed towards people who spend money. It seems that they don't want to give, like, the young or young at heart any chance this go around. It's like, you fuckers don't spend enough money and we've been trying to merchandise this. Fuck you. Fuck you specifically. It's funny, though, because, like, that's a massive block of content. They practically have, like... like, that's larger than any Fox Kids block was when we were younger. And it just, like, destroyed. Could you imagine if one day you turned on, like, Fox Kids or TGI Friday or whatever the fuck, and it was just, no, it's gone. Now it's sports. Fuck you. And it's like, oh my God, you destroyed Power Rangers. Like, could you imagine the outrage? It would have been like a cultural touchstone. Like, the day Saturday morning cartoons died.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was actually just about to bring up. Because, like, we are old enough to remember the day Saturday morning cartoons died.
I think I forget it, but I do remember they used to be a thing. And then sometime it stopped being a thing. I remember Saturday morning cartoons. God, the cartoons were bad. I mean, I'm talking like Back to the Future, the cartoon.
Oh, God, I
remember
that.
Crash Test Dummies. Yeah. Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
Like, I remember the period where the only way that I could get Saturday morning cartoons was tuning into Justice League on YTV because that was the only animated thing airing on a Saturday morning. Yeah, I mean, considering it was Justice League, thank God, because, I mean, chef's kiss, but still.
Yeah. Like, when I was a kid, you could turn, so, like, first of all, you've got the Canadian stations that you could turn on, and until, like, 10 or 11, they'd have kids stuff, regardless of your age group, whatever. And, of course, YTV always had some stuff, depending on quality, depending on whatever. Sometimes it was Batman the Animated, sometimes, no.
Yeah.
No, it was not, and it was not that high quality. And eventually we got Teletoon, and early Teletoon certainly did stretch the budget and show stuff. They certainly showed a thing. But, like, in the early 90s, oh, you could turn on, like, ABC or NBC and get Beakman's World. You could get, like, the original Bill Nye the Science Guy show. And then, like, Sonic the Hedgehog, the serious one. And then, like, I think they had a Barbie show for a while there. They definitely would have reruns of stuff like Inspector Gadget.
I was the kid in the mid-90s who sat down and learned how to program his VCR solely so that I could watch the mid-90s Iron Man. Because the only time it aired was at 6 a.m.
Let's hear that theme song now.
Iron Man!
That went so hard. That went unreasonably hard. That went almost as unreasonably hard as the Silver Surfer on Fox Kids.
Oh God, I remember that.
Yeah, a show so out there that there's a crossover that now exists in the extended MCU universe of Silver Surfer getting advice on running his board from Hank Hill, who says that he should really switch it to propane because it's far more efficient and clean burning. They actually recorded lines of Hank Hill and animated him talking next to Silver Surfer. They plucked the Silver Surfer bit out of the cartoon, and his lines are purely from that because, like,
yeah.
It was way too expensive to animate, but they could do like King of the Hill in house pretty much. And so he's just there like, well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Surfer, you know, if you switch over, you'll save money and it's cleaner.
Oh yeah. No. And
fucking great commercial.
I have no doubt that it was too expensive because with the mid-90s Spider-Man cartoon, the most expensive segment of that was the X-Men crossover.
Yeah, and it wasn't only like that, but like to capture the because like those looked great and they were all chasing the quality of Batman the Animated series. So it's like already you have this high watermark and everything else chasing it trying to reach this high level watermark. And like X-Men was like pretty damn decent for the time. The Iron Man pretty damn decent for the time, but I think they put their most effort into the Silver Surfer because to get that Kirby look, they animated on black, just like Batman. Anyway.
But like with that crossover, it was that they had to fly in all the X-Men voice actors to LA because that's where they recorded for Spider-Man.
Oh my God.
And we know for a fact that at least one of the X-Men voice actors is Canadian.
And she was probably living in Halifax at the time. So, woo.
Yeah.
Good ticket.
So when they do the Secret Wars story later on and the only X-Men Spider-Man brings in is Storm, that was strictly because her voice actor actually lived in L.A.
That always did seem really weird. It's like, why did Spidey connect with Storm? I don't know. Maybe they had some, like, maybe they went and got, like, a drink afterward and were like, all those other people are so fucking weird, but I feel like we can talk. Just Aurora and Pete. Great buddies.
With these HBO Max cuts, I'm going to end by saying, on the one hand, I understand why they're cutting this massive swath, because, again, $3 billion debt. But on the other hand, I am going to end by reading a tweet from Mary Lum, a storyboard artist and revisionist on Aquaman, King of Atlantis, and Infinity Train. Please watch our cartoons before they're removed this week. Obviously, that's no longer possible, but I see nearly my entire cartoon career being removed here on these lists, which is wild. Thanks for watching and supporting the things we make with love.
Yeah, and I presume that at some point they'll bring them back in whatever version that they create of a streaming service or what have in a couple of years. But like, first of all, yeah, for the creators, that fucking sucks. For the fans, that fucking sucks. I understand some people were like literally mid-season and they'd hit play and it'd go, don't know what you're watching, bud. It's wow, that really fucking sucks. At least Netflix lets you finish watching some shit.
Now, for our final story, if you haven't figured out who we're going to be talking about right now, goddamn Ezra Miller.
I can pretend we're not.
I almost want you to drop in a It's Miller Time soundbite.
Oh,
it's Miller time.
Now, we've of course gone back and forth on what Warner Brothers Discovery is or is not going to do with the Flash movie. Mm-hmm. However, for a bit of the bit of backstory here, it came out, I think, shortly after our last B-roll recording, that Warner Brothers had three options that they were considering. Option number one was that if Ezra Miller gets professional help and explains their behavior, the film is released with limited press. Mm-hmm. Limited press, of course, meaning the studio is going to let you have everyone except Ezra Miller because they are not going to let the media anywhere near them.
Yeah, and you're not allowed to ask any questions about Ezra. No questions.
No.
None.
Now, option two, if they don't get help, the film could still be released with minimal publicity from them, and they'll be recast for future films. Now, in this case, I think they would have been looking at what's called a zombie release, which is pretty much what we saw with the last Fantastic Beasts film, where the film would basically just get dropped out there and there's minimal promotion or mention of any kind.
Yeah, you're more or less giving up on it and just going, okay, you're 18, get out of my house.
Yeah. And option three was if the situation gets worse, WB could scrap the film altogether. And let's be honest, by worse, it would either have to come out that Ezra Miller actually was a pedophile or that they had actually killed someone.
I think there's a bunch of middle grounds in there where worse is still a lot of things. You don't actually have to go all the way to those and still get like a bunch of things. You can have a lot of petty convictions that add up. You can have a lot of suggestions of danger and things. There's still a lot that'll happen between now and when that movie comes out. But yeah, I do find it fascinating that they clearly took a knife and held it up to the movie's throat and went, Ezra, pay attention. Ezra, we need you to pay attention. We are going to kill this tonight, now, if you do not pay attention and agree to get some help. And so they at least put out a statement saying, sorry about that, and I'm trying to get help. And it's like, clearly, they were like, Ezra, this is a now thing. 5 minutes from now, it's dead. What are you going to do?
You know what? I don't think it was that specifically because, and I love that you said put out a statement because I was just about to say, 4 days after the news of those three options broke, long enough time for Warner Brothers lawyers, and I'm convinced this is what happened. This was enough time for Warner Brothers lawyers to basically go to Ezra Miller and go, if you don't do that, if you don't fix this right now, we will sue you for defamation and damages and take everything.
Yeah, because damages in this case would be every single dollar dropped into various franchises. They could claim over $1 billion in damage. It's like, no, you fucking ruined two franchises.
Yeah, and my logic here is pretty much specifically from something that I picked up on from Double Toasted on during one of their shows when they mentioned, you remember when the Kevin Spacey scandal broke?
Yeah.
And he was still on House of Cards.
Yeah.
Guess what Netflix did?
Sued him. Or sued him rather. That's the thing. I don't remember what happened to that. I just remember him being super cringe and trying to play it off. And it's like, no, dude, your career's dead. Fuck off.
Yeah, that was a suit that Kevin Spacey may still be paying for.
Oh, that's delightful. Good.
Now,
good. I hope he has to pay for that the rest of his life.
Yeah. Now, as I said, literally just four days after those three options came out, I think we all assumed that it was going to be option two, the zombie release.
Yeah, sure.
Turns out it was actually option one because Variety just happens to get an exclusive statement from Miller. Quote, having recently gone through a time of intense crisis, so many things that I want to say just in that first part, I now understand that I am suffering complex mental health issues and have begun ongoing treatment. I want to apologize to everyone that I have alarmed and upset with my past behavior. I am committed to doing the necessary work to get back to a healthy, safe, and productive stage in my life. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm sorry. They've committed kidnapping multiple times.
Yeah, and I suspect that it's very much a thing of, it's option one until it's inevitably option two, until inevitably we have to consider option three. Because even if Ezra doesn't do anything bad ever again, there's still a lot of legal ramifications to play out. And there's details will become public. And it may not survive that. The project may not survive that. We'll see.
I mean,
fucking hell.
There was, of course, back at the start of this whole insanity, that young woman that Ezra was accused of grooming and, again, basically kidnapped and brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
Would have loved to know how that played out. You remember that family that was staying at Miller's home in Vermont?
Yep.
Do you happen to know where they are now?
Protective custody?
Nope. As I understand it, the police have no idea where they are.
Oh, okay. Well, that could be bad, that could be good, depending, you know, like, imagine if Ezra was the victim in all this, and it's just, like, a lot of people manipulating them. Sometimes that happens, and those people just, like, vanished as soon as they found out that it couldn't work as well. Who knows? Maybe that's the truth. Maybe the opposite is the truth. We don't know, and the learning is going to make or break. Like, this is real crucible shit. Ezra and the franchise either comes out of it or they burn up. And that's it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, there is a lot that we don't know, and I'm not disputing that in any way. Right now, based on what we know right now, when Ezra says, I'm committed to doing the necessary work to get back to a healthy, safe, and productive stage of my life, like, everything that they've done up to this point, I'm sorry, that needs to involve jail time.
Yeah, at least it needs to clearly involve, like 1,000 hours of community service. Something clearly large. Who knows if punitive is, like, appropriate? I don't know. Maybe their mental state isn't in the right area for a punitive, in which case you have to go, like, treatment. Something more than just, oops, my bad, keep giving me money, please, has to occur here. Otherwise, it's just a sign that, like, okay, you can literally be above the law in Hollywood again.
Precisely.
Great. I'm sure that won't lead anywhere bad again.
Like, this statement feels like the standard studio handling a scandal.
Yes, and that's why I don't even feel like Ezra's lawyers were necessarily behind that. That's very much like an agreed upon thing. Where it's like, we're all gonna, okay. Everyone's behind this until someone steps out of line, which is inevitable, and that someone's usually the big name. Oh god.
And like, you usually a statement like this, you're looking at a star who was arrested for drunk driving, or it came out that they have a drug problem.
Yeah, or like, they have an abuse problem, but it's like, usually one it's their domestic partner, and there's multiple repeated elements of that, but it's like they can, what a terrible fucking thing to say, but they can keep it under control, quote unquote, in public.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of that, where it's like, no, you're not like selectively targeting a victim that you know you can, you know, keep out of the public eye for the most part. No, it's a completely different, more unhinged kind of random acts. Great. I don't know what's worse. They're both pretty fucking terrible.
Well, the thing I was gonna say is, like, in Miller's case specifically, you know, like I said, this is like multiple charges of kidnapping.
Yeah.
Possible child grooming.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the other hand, you've got like someone like Armie Hammer's, whose career was entirely destroyed.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think anything that they are accused of was consensual ultimately, because you can like groom someone into quote unquote consent, and it's not real consent, but like his career fucking died. It was like snuffed out. Like, there's the line, it's done. And it's fascinating how like that just like it's over. And he was the kind of guy who like had that control of like, I'm not gonna do this stuff in public, but I'm gonna do it in private. And when it came out, it completely fucking destroyed his career. Completely destroyed his career. And if he was doing things consensually, then his career deserved to be destroyed. It is fascinating how much leeway Ezra Miller gets if they are indeed guilty of the worst aspects of what they are accused of. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, and like there is rumor they may have been starting a cult in Iceland.
I'm not surprised. A lot of people start cults. Jared Leto has a cult. Oh, I found a really fucking disturbing thing out on the weekend. Unrelated to the Letos.
Oh, God.
Like, distantly, but like, ah! No, thank you.
But yeah, like, This statement, and with Ezra Miller in particular, and going back to that idea of how much we don't know about everything going on around them, How did Ezra Miller go from those Instagram rants of, I am in another dimension, you police can't touch me, just truly batshit insane things, to this lucid, contrite statement?
I find taking away the morning bowl of random narcotics and jelly beans for a week usually results in that.
Oh yeah, you know, like that would certainly do it. On my end, based on what we know up to this point, I would be shocked if Ezra Miller doesn't essentially go the Robert Downey Jr. route, where they're going to jail and then maybe into rehab. They just straight go away for a while.
For a while, yeah. Essentially be publicly dead, more or less. And then come back by doing the best work you were ever possibly capable of. Yeah.
And there we're even talking just pre-Iron Man.
Oh God, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is so good.
Yeah, that's actually another one we could cover because I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's so good. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is one of those movies where you're like, this makes me so angry about Val Kilmer. Because we had a taste of late career Val Kilmer, and it was great.
Yeah.
And then circumstance took that away from all of us, and it's just, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, cancer. Fuck you. Get out of Val Kilmer. Anyway.
Yeah, like you know that movie that you've always heard great things about it, but life and circumstance, you just somehow never get around to sitting down and watching it?
Yeah.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is my that movie.
It's, you know, we'll watch it. That's all I'll say. Yeah. We'll watch it. It's so good. Well, I guess ending on a commitment to watching Kiss Kiss Bang Bang isn't the worst place to go.
I was just gonna say. Yeah, this is a good stop opportunity. Like, I had one more small story just in case, but Lord knows it can wait.
It can wait. It can wait. And if you can wait just a little bit longer, you should definitely wait for our next episode, which will be covering the ballstastic RRR. RDRR. It's going to be goddamn insane. I really look forward to it. And you should too. We're recording Wednesday, yeah? You said Saturday in the message, and I got thrown by it for a minute.
It's a 3-hour movie. The earliest I could possibly watch it would be Friday.
That is fine. So, but because it is such an epic film, and we could only fit so much awesome per square cubic meter, we are going to be pushing this episode, and probably another one later, of Real Geeks a little bit further back to early next week, so that we can pack in as much RRR as possible. RRR! So look for that like Sunday.
Yeah, I was just going to say that between my average commute to and from work and the fact that, let's be honest, we don't stick to a regular, like, solid schedule anyway.
Hell no.
Y'all should be able to understand by this point.
Listen, it was either this or Heaven's Gate. And this is slightly more entertaining than Heaven's Gate. Good Lord. Have you ever seen that film?
I don't know. I don't think so.
If you like 4 hours of panning shots across the Midwest in the 1800s, you certainly will enjoy half of Heaven's Gate. The other half is even more boring.
Oh, 1980 Kris Kristofferson film?
You know it.
Okay,
this movie literally destroyed cowboy films for a decade.
Oh.
It destroyed an industry. It destroyed the director who had just made the most Oscar-winningest film of any new director ever. We'll get into this movie. Oh, yes. We'll get into it. But that is for another day. And until another day, you should like what you got from us today, you goddamn bastards. And like, share, and subscribe. And if you don't like the free content that you're getting, well, then write us an email and complain about it. And we'll turn that into content.
Yeah, we're basically just going to tell you to shut the fuck up because it's free.
And if you do want to send us that free content, do so too.
RealGeeksHFX@gmail.com. You can also reach the show on Twitter at RealGeeksHFX. I may not post on the Twitter all that often, but I swear that I check it. Now, should you want to reach me directly or witness my Oscar-worthy fake anger in minute-long clip form, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, or Twitter at The Merit Time Lord. Or if for some strange reason you want to email me directly, you can reach me at TheMeritTimeLord@gmail.com.
There you go. I am on Twitter at Friday in Halifax and everywhere else at Crash and Burn. And if you can't find me that way, the A-Team have my card. If you can find the A-Team, you can find me.
Or let's be honest, just start a fight somewhere on Twitter and she'll probably show up.
Yep. I have a radar for it. Just boop, 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 boop. Someone's happening. Some drama's happening. Away! Well, until next time, get the hell out of here!
Later.